Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Broadcaster John Laws has died at the age of 90. The man nicknamed the Golden Tonsils will start his broadcasting career at 1953 in Bendigo in regional Victoria. He later became a household name on Sydney radio stations 2UE and 2GB.
Hello world, this is John Laws.
He was also widely networked across regional Australia. Laws hung up the headphones for the last time in November last year after 71 years on air. He wasn't without controversy. In 1999, John Laws was caught up in a cash for comment scandal. In a moment, you'll get the history of John Laws, but first, I want to bring in Mike Carlton. Mike was the breakfast presenter at 2GB while John Laws was hosting mornings. It was during this period that people first witnessed Laws' remarkable ability to command an audience. When John Laws moved over to 2GB, he brought his number one mornings audience with him from 2UE, which also helped propel Carlton to the top spot. Later, when Laws returned to 2UE, Carlton experienced the audience shift back. This was one of the first clear demonstrations in Australian radio of how audiences would follow a star presenter, something we would see later with personalities like Alan Jones and Ray Hadley. But Laws was the trailblazer. Mike Carlton, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very late for me.
It is. I'm sorry, but thank you for being awake. Look, you knew John Laws for decades. Have you formed a final opinion of John Laws? What was he like?
Professionally, he was a great broadcaster. There was none better. Technically, and I mean in the sense of knowing how to use a microphone, how to play records, how to pace his voice, all that, there was none better. He was an absolute master of the craft. As a man, we started off as friends. We had a violent feud for a while, and then we made up and became friends again. He was engaging. He was droll. He had a very sardonic wit, and he was a tremendous company at lunch or dinner. He was a very, very complex, colourful man.
Yeah, on that, do you think we ever saw the real John Laws, Mike?
Probably not, because John was very, very careful of his image. He was a star, and he behaved like a star. He nurtured the image of himself as an omnipotent political commentator and savior of the world and so on and so on. He did all that. I think at times he was actually very shy, and I don't think he formed close friendships. Many people were sort of intimidated by him, I think, needlessly so. And I'm not sure that he had many close friends. He had knew an awful lot of people. And an awful lot of people sucked up to him and were desperate for his approval and his opinions and so on. But I don't think he had a lot of really close friends.
Mm. Look, as I mentioned, you two worked together at 2UE and also 2GB.
I used to listen to him when I was a kid.
Well,
I was still at school when I first heard John Laws. He was a disc jockey then in the afternoons. When I got home from school, you would turn on first Bob Rogers and then John Laws.
Well, When what was it like the first time you met him, meeting someone that you used to listen to on the radio?
Well, I worked at the ABC for a long while, and then I went into commercial radio. And it was like meeting this sort of, you know, iconic figures. I mean, the king. he sort of bowed down and bowed and scraped and got out of his way. And he liked to display all the what you might call appurtenances. You know, all the baubles and bangles of stardom. You know, the big Rolls Royce and the stable of cars, the Jaguars and the Aston Martins and God knows what else and so on. And so he was a very impressive figure for all those reasons. He exuded glamour.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you two worked together at 2GB and 2UE, where you saw huge audience movement at that time, essentially following John Laws. What was it like to witness his ability to move audiences like that?
I was at 2GB doing breakfast, and he was then at 2UE, and 2UE was dying. It was in a bad way, and I rang him and said, "Why don't you come over here to 2GB, and I'll do breakfast and you do mornings?" And he thought, "Oh yeah," and he did it, and then they made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and he did, have an extraordinary power to carry an audience with him. They followed him. His audience was loyal and devoted, and it was probably a majority of women, but not a huge majority. Men liked him in almost equal numbers, I think. But he did have that star power of carrying the audience around after him, which is why he was paid such a lot of money.
Well, yes, if I read correctly, what the first radio presenter in Australia to be given the $1 million paycheck?
Probably. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anyone else who might have it. Maybe Bob Rogers, but I think John probably was the highest paid. Certainly, you're probably right. He probably was the first to crack the seven figures. Yeah.
Mm. How did you see audiences react when he moved? Were they upset? Did they how loyal were they? They just followed him.
Just followed him. Yeah, simple as that.
Well, what do you think those particular strategies or qualities that Laws had that made him so compelling to listeners?
He had a very fine sense of what people wanted, what they wanted to hear, and he gave it to them. He spoke very directly to people's hopes and fears and aspirations. He shared his problems with them, and they with him. For a while there, it was bizarre. For a while he made a specialty of saving women from committing suicide. There was a weird aspect of his broadcasting for a couple of years. The women would ring and say, "Oh, John, my husband just left me. I think I'm going to kill myself." And he said, "Stay right there, darling." And this went on for half an hour.
Wow.
You're probably too young to remember that.
Yes.
But he did that for a while. Yes.
Mike Carlton is with you on ABC Radio. This is Nightlife. And you're hearing about the life of John Laws. It's just broken tonight that he has passed away at the age of 90. Mike worked very closely with John Laws at 2GB and 2UE. He, as you said, he was a man of many sides. There were plenty of controversies as well. Tell us about the atmosphere in the halls of 2UE during the Cash for Comment and how Laws' reputation was impacted by that.
The management was practically suicidal when it broke. Because it was a horrifying story. It was known, I guess, around the traps that both Laws and Jones, John Laws and Alan Jones, were taking money on the side to push various products or projects. And it was just sort of unspoken. It was something that happened. But when it blew up, when the scandal blew apart, it started to look very, very ugly indeed. John always maintained that he wasn't a journalist, that he was a broadcaster, and he was a gun for hire and a salesman, which really wasn't good enough. He had taken money to change his opinions. And that's unavoidable fact. It all came out there in the inquiry that was held. Possibly not in such a sinister way as Alan Jones did, but the mood then was very, very ugly. I remember the manager, they called me in and said, what the hell are we going to ask me? He asked me, have you taken any money? And I said, no, I haven't. And I hadn't.
Yeah.
And he said, what are we going to do about it? So we sat there and sort of tried to nut out some sort of strategy to minimize the damage. But it wasn't easy. But that was the great blemish and flaw in his career. I don't think he ever admitted it, but it was.
Wow. How did the station recover?
People forgot about it, I think. Laws's listeners, and he's huge crowds of hordes of listeners could believe he could do no wrong. And they stuck with him. They didn't desert him, drove and said, oh, how frightful, and go somewhere else. They hung around.
Mm. Well, you said, before you go, you did mention that, you know, you did have big blues together, but you eventually made up. How did that happen?
Well, when he came across the 2GB, he basically had to rebuild himself, and he was very good at this. He could change his act. He had hitherto been largely a disc jockey and an entertainer. And he had 2GB, we'd started this news talk concept, and he had to be a political commentator. And I guess I helped him in a way in that direction, as a journalist I could. And he did it magnificently, to the point where Paul Keating made that famous remark that if you want to educate Australia, you have to educate John Laws.
Yeah.
Which he did. Keating actually said that. And it was on the John Law Show back in 1986 that Keating delivered his famous warning that the Australian economy was a basket case and that we were about to become a banana republic. So Laws had a huge amount of political influence as well. He wasn't just a mug by any means.
Mm. Well, Mike, look, really appreciate your time tonight. I know it's late, but thank you so much.
I'm going for a swim in the morning. I'll see you. Thank you.
Enjoy. It's Mike Carlton there, journalist and former colleague of John Laws. And if anything in that conversation brought up something for you, you can always call Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Nightlife with James Finlay. This is ABC Radio.
And as you've been hearing, veteran broadcaster John Laws has died at the age of 90. Let's get a bit more about the life and history of the man. Steve Ahern is the publisher of Radio Info and author of the radio textbook Making Radio. Steve, welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks, James. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. Look, how did John Laws get his start?
Well, he was born in Papua New Guinea, actually, when Australians were instrumental in running PNG as a colony. He was evacuated along with his family in the war, and then he lived in Mossman, Silvertail. But he always thought, you know, something else is out there. So he went jackarooing when he left school, as you did in those days, in the mid-teens, and he really began to love the country. He had a great voice. He always had that amazing voice. And his mum actually rang the manager of a radio station in Bendigo, 3BO, very unfortunate call sign, and said, you know, my son's got a good voice. Would you consider him for radio? He's working in the region there. And so Eric Patterson said yes, and John Laws turned up and did an audition and ended up getting a job as a radio DJ at 3BO playing music. He moved to Orange and then to Newcastle, and he always really had a soft spot for Newcastle. It is a beautiful town and a great radio town. And he worked there at 2HD, and even later in his career when he was networked, it was really important to him that he would always be heard in Newcastle. So, yes, that was his early start. Then he went to Sydney And there was no talk back then, and certainly no sense that he was, you know, a shock jock or a talkback radio announcer. He was a music jock, along with Bob Laws, Bob Rogers, as has been said, and quite a few others. So there were these big personalities who would bring the new records to the pop-loving teenagers of that time, and they became household names for music announcers. And over time, he moved from 2UE to 2GB and around again. As Mike said, he brought the audience with him. He was one of those people, great personality, who could just transfer the audience from one station to another. A terrible thing for the managers of the radio stations because they knew that they depended on his personality to get the audience. But he certainly demonstrated that they were listening to him, not the radio station. And every time he moved, which he did several times in Sydney, 2UE, 2GB, 2UW, he just brought the audience with him.
Yeah. How do you think he was able to develop such a loyal following, Steve?
It was very interesting to hear Mike Carlton talking about his personality and having met him, interviewed him, talked to him, many times over the years. I'd agree with Mike that he was a bit shy and he was a bit quiet. And whenever you asked him, you know, what is it that you've got? He told me, I just talk to people. And I said, well, you know, what are the highlights of your radio career? And he would often say in response to that, tomorrow's show. So I don't think he really planned it. I don't think he chose to have that position. But of course, you know, he had influence and what he said mattered. He had huge audiences in the capital cities and in regions. And so, of course, what he said mattered. And I think in the end, he was a quiet and intelligent man who was observant of things that were going on, and he wanted to ask questions and he wanted to get people on the air and represent his listeners, really. That's one of the things that he always told me. I just ask questions that my listeners would like me to ask.
Yeah. We'll get to how he was able to spread his show across the country. He was quite successful in some markets for networking. But he wasn't just on radio. He was also, well, the voice of many ads for a generation, really, one of which
he was, indeed.
I've got the Valvoline ad here from the 80s, which is quite iconic.
I like to change my cars, but I never change my oil. Well, I change my oil, but not my brand of oil, because I want real protection. You know what I mean? Valvoline
XLD New Generation Motor Oil with secret additive Chemalloy for protection against corrosion, oxidation, gum formation.
Protection for all my cars. You know what I mean?
Gosh.
Beautiful. And of course, he had so many cars. Mike Carlton referred to his Rolls Royce, and, you know, he had a stable full of great cars. That was part of his the impression he wanted to create. But there you heard what became known as the voice of God. And if you think, you know, we're talking about the 1960s, maybe the 70s, the idea of God and the idea of radio was different then, you know. People had seen the movie Moses in black and white, where this great voice of God would come out of a cloud. And that voice sounded like John Laws, deep and magnificent. So when God tells you to buy Valvoline, I guess you just have to buy Valvoline, don't you?
Wow. Also, another brand that he was connected to was Mortein. I remember that ad as well growing up.
That's right.
Gosh. You're on ABC Radio. This is Nightlife. I'm James Findlay. With you is Steve Ahern, the publisher of Radio Info. And you're hearing about the life of John Laws. It's just news breaking this evening that he has passed away at the age of 90.
Talking of that Morteen ad, the tagline was, when you're on a good thing, stick to it. They had Louis the Fly, and, you know, it was all about buy this important fly spray, it'll kill the flies, etc. But famously, after many, many years of being the voice and the face of Morteen, he was made a better offer to go to another fly spray. And he changed the tagline from, when you're on a good thing, stick to it, to, when you're on a good thing, switch to it.
Oh, wow.
Another very famous advertising use of the Laws voice and profile.
Gosh. And doing these advertisements would have made him one of the richest people in the industry, Steve.
Yes, of course. And, you know, in the radio industry of the time, you were paid extra to do your voiceovers. In the early days of his career, he realised that, okay, well, I've got my salary, it's not that great, but I seem to have a good voice and I've got an audience and people know my voice, so I can get this extra commission when I read the ads. And he was a master at reading ads. If you listen to it, as we heard, one of those ads there, and so many of them, he would pause in the right place. He would change his voice up and down. He would end at the right place, and he would highlight the product. And he just had that knack of delivering a live read or a radio ad in a perfect way that people were impressed. They knew it was John Laws recommending it, and they'd buy the product, and of course he would get the commission. Over time, that escalated to a controversial time that Mike Carlton referred to, which was cash for comment. But, you know, you were always paid for voicing radio ads, and it's a commercial radio industry he was in, so nobody thought too much of that until it started to become a big thing with cash for comment.
Mm. He was also quite successful networking his program to different regions too, wasn't he?
Yes, and again, having chatted to him many times over the years, he loved the bush. I think that time jackarooing really made an impression on him. He just loved country people. He wanted to be part of that feel. He loved chatting to people. He would spend lots of time on his program chatting to people from the country. And, of course, they loved that. He was really one of the most significant figures of, I guess, unity of Australia in that period. Of course, television was around, but radio was still really important in regional Australia, and everybody listened to John Laws' show between 9 and 12. I worked in Bourke many years ago, and like so many stations, our station took Lawsy. You would have to listen. I was assigned to panel the Laws show, and you'd have to listen because most other network shows, you would know when the ads would play. You would break off at 9:15 and you'd play 2 minutes of ads, and in Sydney they would hear different ads. But Lawsy would just talk, and you'd get this message down the line in the feed, you know, ad break coming up in 90 seconds. And then suddenly Lawsy would keep talking to the caller, usually from a country town, and we'd hear the message from Murray Happ or one of the other panel operators, who'd say, oh, forget that, not 90 seconds. We'll probably go to ads in 2 minutes. So there was always this this network trepidation of, will I hit the ads right? Will I get the out cue? Will I play my ads that I have to play in my location? These days, all of that's very automated, but Laws was just, because it was so important to him to be talking to the people and not just timing out to an ad break, it was nightmare for us on the other end of the line.
Gosh, yeah, I can imagine. Well, imagine what it would be like for the people in the building following his lead as well.
Yes, indeed.
Mike also talked a bit about the influence that he had with politicians. Politicians really wanted to get John Laws on side, didn't they?
Yes, and I think that speaks to also that thing you were asking about before, you know, his position. He didn't often take a political position. He tried to speak for the people and ask the questions that his audience would like to ask. And politicians understood that and respected it. And in Keating saying that, he understood that Laws was asking questions for the audience. And so through Laws, Keating and many other politicians, including John Howard too, who said that a couple of times, they understood that if they could make their argument to John Laws and Laws would listen and accept it, then probably the audience would too. So they saw it as a very important way of getting their message across. They understood that Laws would ask hard questions and had to have the answers, and they had to articulate them well to explain that to Laws and the audience. Mm.
And just before you go, Steve, John Laws also wasn't, brought some controversy towards him as well. There was the Cash for Comment scandal.
Yes, indeed. That was the logical escalation, I guess you would say, of what I was explaining before about, you know, getting paid for commercials. And the broadcasting authority at the time decided that he was not an entertainer, which he claimed. He was not a music radio announcer. He was a current affairs announcer. And that was because of his influence. Now, Laws never thought of himself as that. Maybe it was a loophole he was trying to exploit. But I think it was more that he genuinely believed that he was just asking questions that his audience would like to know. But anyway, in the end, there was money changing hands for some issues, banking and various industries. And over time, it transpired that Laws may have changed his opinion on these things and that he might have been commissioned to do advertising and paid for that. So if you were just a music announcer, that wouldn't be a big issue. But because he had such a following and such an influential talk content on his program, the Broadcasting Authority didn't accept his view that he was just an entertainer. They deemed his show a current affairs show. And then, like Alan Jones and some others, he had to abide by the rules of news and current affairs, which was to disclose if he was paid for something and various other things as well. Yes, so that was quite a scandal, and Laws never ceased to bash the broadcasting authority of the time because he did not accept that he was guilty of those Cash for Comment allegations.
Mm. Well, Steve, I really appreciate your time this afternoon, or tonight rather. Thank you for taking us through it.
Good to talk to you, James. Bye.
Thanks, you too. Steve Ahern there, publisher of Radio Info and author of Radio Textbook, Making Radio. You're on ABC Radio. I'm James Finlay. You're hearing about the life of John Laws. Paul's in Brisbane. Good evening to you, Paul. You listened to John Laws for quite a while.
Oh, yes, James, and good evening. Well, I first would have heard of John probably 64 because I was way up in Cairns and he had a little taped show that, you know, used to go to the radio station up there for about half an hour every week. So, yeah, I always used to love listening to that because I actually dreamed of becoming a DJ myself. And so he was, yeah, quite an idol.
Yeah, right. Now, you you wrote a poem for him, I understand, that you got to read to him at one point.
Yes, that's right, James. Like, Yeah, I did try quite a few times, you know, because, yeah, just had a talk with him, but always got the engaged signal because he was so popular. Yeah. But it was 2020, and he wasn't even broadcasting Brisbane, like on a station, but I knew that he was broadcasting in Sydney, so I rang up that station, and, yeah, I was lucky enough to get through, and he took my call and let me do the poem. Time which I'd written.
Yeah, do you want to give it, read us a bit of it tonight?
I'd love to, James. Yeah, well, it's based on, you know, the fact that I wanted to get a call through to him and never did, but I wrote this poem imagining what it would be like to talk to him, and here it is. Hello, world. This is John, and who could our first caller be? Oh, g'day, John. It's Paulie, mate, and Paulie from Beenleigh. Hello, Paul. How are you today, and what can I do for you? Oh, well, John, I'm ringing up, mate, because I want to know what to do. When I was young, I first begun to imitate your sound. Well, that's fine, but a voice like mine is not so easily found. Oh, I know that, John, but I suppose what I'm trying to say is, do you think I should speak in a deeper tone? Is that okay? Not bad, but you also have to know when to pause. Otherwise, I'll put you wise. You'll never be the next John Laws. Oh, yeah, that's great, mate. Well, while you're there, you got any other tips? For example, is there a special way that I should roll my lips? Oh, I wouldn't put it quite like that. But yes, you have to roll. If I just droned in monotone, I'd soon be on the dole. Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Well, flaming mozzies. Do you know a spray to use? Mortine, Paul, when you're on a good thing, what is there to lose? Yeah, that's great. Thank you, mate. Hey, I can rhyme the same as you. Yes, you should try bush poetry. A lot of my friends do. Well, you never know. I might give it a go. Can you do your Velveline? Comments for cash. Be a bit rash, if you know what I mean. Oh, thanks, John. Mate, you're the greatest. There'll never be another. Well, thanks for the call, and good luck, Paul. And you be kind to each other. And a little less of me. There we are.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Paul. That's fantastic. And look, how did he react when you read it to him?
Yeah, it was pretty good. He said, oh, well, oh, that's pretty good. It was actually at the time of COVID, you know, because I told him, yeah, I'm actually a performing bush poet, which is my hobby.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a bit quiet there with COVID, and so, yeah, it was a chance to do some writing. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
He was actually very, very generous.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with us tonight, Paul.
Thank you, James. All the best to everybody.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.